banks are back under fire. And so investors have to ask, are the problems systemic after all? Here's what matters. Live from New York City, I'm Lauren Goodwin, and this is Market Matters from New York Life Investments. In this podcast, we bring you the best insights from across the New York Life Investments platform because we believe that by sharing perspectives and engaging with you, our listeners, we can all become better investors. Welcome, everybody. It's the week of May 8th, 2023, and for the past week, banks, specifically the regional banks, a troubling set of failures, and the risk of some broader economic impact are back in the news. This restarted with the recent failure of First Republic, which was immediately bought by JP Morgan. And after that, the market seems to have lost confidence in several other regional banks. Two of the main ones that are in the line of fire were, or are, PacWest and Western Alliance, but those are just a couple. So I brought Julia Herman back in to talk me through this today.
Happy to be here. There's a lot of room for debate as to why this is happening and what it means for the economy.
Absolutely. So let's start digging in with the why. And to do that, I think we need to start with First Republic. I didn't find this specific bank failure surprising, since it seemed that the bank almost failed at the same time as Signature Bank a few months ago.
Yeah, we knew that First Republic was under a meaningful amount of stress back when SVB and Signature Bank failed, but it took about a month for the final failure to happen. And, you know, my somewhat cynical take on this is that if a $30 billion liquidity injection from larger banks paired with the full force of the Fed's emergency liquidity facilities, if that can't save you, failure was inevitable.
Yeah, that may be true. And look, there were elements of the situation of First Republic that were a little bit different. Its wealth management business, for example, was a prized asset among the financial services industry and a high value add component of this business model. So that's, you know, potentially something that contributed to the overall funding cost picture for First Republic that looked a little bit different from the other banks. But what clearly jarred the market is exactly what you said, that the full force of the Fed's liquidity facilities designed to prevent bank failures amid recent deposit flight didn't end up actually saving First Republic. And so now investors are wondering, I think reasonably so, if this might be the same for other regional banks. And we certainly saw some hedge fund type short selling attacks on the banks like PacWest and Western Alliance in the last couple of weeks. So I think that leaves us with two central questions to debate today, which is this a systemic issue after all? And what does that mean for the economy?
Yeah, I mean, those definitely are the two questions. And when it comes to the question of whether this is systemic after all, whether we and a lot of other folks were wrong in our initial assessment that it wasn't, here's where the sentiment versus fundamentals, or that smoke versus fire argument, really starts to come in. So let me just lay out the top-down data for us to get started with. If you look at the top-down data coming out of the Fed on a weekly basis now regarding deposits and the bank's use of emergency liquidity facilities, it's telling us that there is not a systemic banking crisis, at least through May 3rd, which is what the most recent round of data covers. Deposits are still stable for both large and small banks, and banks' use of those emergency liquidity windows provided by the Fed, they ticked up very slightly at the end of April, but in that first week of May, decreased dramatically. So if you look at the data, banks on aggregate are not needing to go to the Fed for funding because they're bleeding deposits.
I like what you're saying here about the difference between sentiment about regional banks versus fundamentals of some of the banks that we're seeing coming under fire in the last week or so. And the reason is that these banks' business models are in a different condition than those that have failed. They have strong business lines, they have manageable funding costs, and they have not been experiencing deposit outflows, and they weren't experiencing deposit outflows when they were hit by short sellers last week. PacWest had actually just reported its Q1 results, which showed relatively healthy business and stable deposits. So we're looking at some sort of market sentiment towards these banks that isn't reflecting fundamentals. I think there's an open question as to whether it matters, right? If the market believes it, does it matter whether it's true? But there is a difference here between what the market is doing and the fundamentals of these businesses.
Yeah. And I think the best way to see that is just in the incredible amount of volatility in these names. We saw huge selling pressure in these names throughout last week, but then we saw equally significant rally on Friday in a lot of these names. That rally may or may not be ongoing today, and these stocks are still down big on a one-week basis, but that volatility, the idea of short selling and then a short squeeze, it's pointing to a very mixed sentiment picture.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And that's what makes me squeamish about what's happening in the market, because even if this volatility seems to be more sentiment driven than fundamentally driven, it's still happening. And there still seems to be this slow, drawn out bank run that the Fed and other regulators have not yet been able to stem through messaging or policy support. And, when businesses that are publicly traded come under fire, it can impact the fundamentals at the end of the day. So it's still serious what we're seeing.
For sure. Yeah, I hear you. And we've seen the market have temper tantrums many times in the past several years when that punch bowl of policy support gets taken away or it's not provided in the way the market wants. And yes, the data on those deposits and the use of liquidity facilities could change for next week. But as of now, overall deposits look quite stable. I also think at this point in the conversation, it's important to just call attention to what's happening in the money market, because we know that the money market has seen dramatic inflows in the past few weeks, in large part because large bank deposits actually were declining as well, where large banks were seeing folks leaving their checking accounts and going into money market funds. So it wasn't just a small bank story. Now, that rapid inflow into the money market did slow down in the past few weeks, but it's now picked up again. So I have to sort of wonder how much juice is left in there in terms of further inflows into the money market, but that could well be contributing to, or at least signaling what's happening on the sentiment side.
I like what you're pointing out here in terms of there has been this broader dynamic of lots of deposits, pretty stable in the financial system. And that has changed over the last several months because other forms of short-term or long-term savings, such as the money markets, have offered a higher yield. And that has quickly changed the deposit structure for many banks. And that matters. And so stabilization in money market flows matters as a result. I think that's very helpful. I also think that, this first question that we raised around is what's going on in the regional bank systemic. Essentially, what we've said is that it doesn't have to be. But if market price action keeps working in a negative way towards these banks, it could be. So it's something that we need to keep our eyes on. And that brings us very nicely to the second question that we raised for this episode, which is then, what does all this have to do for the economic outlook? And at least for the sake of debate, I'd argue that tightening credit conditions, which is what happens when, or has historically happened, when financial institutions are seeing stress in the sector or in the economy, it tends to impact smaller businesses. If you think about the regional banks and who their clientele are, there's lots of small and medium-sized businesses that have lines of credit at these smaller banks. And in some cases, they're going to have to move those lines of credit or do without them. And funding costs have been increasing. And so as the sector is experiencing stress, it can impact the real economy through tightening credit conditions. And then, of course, if small businesses are impacted, that impacts employment outcomes as well. So if you think about the economic cycle and the way that it evolves, the stress in the banking sector is almost like a little bit of a push on the cycle, potentially accelerating it.
So what I'm hearing from you is that because this banking sector tumult might not be over yet, we might still see further tightening of credit conditions, which was our initial expectation, but we'd be seeing more of that. And that would then have this knock-on effect to smaller businesses and potentially dramatically and suddenly worsen employment outcomes. So if I'm hearing you correctly there, my one point of pushback is this. We've been talking for the past few weeks about how we really need the labor market to cool in order for inflation to decline and do so durably over a long amount of time, avoiding inflation coming back up again in a second peak. So in a way, if we're potentially looking at a more negative employment scenario in the nearer term than expected. And we're going to have to cope with that recession scenario potentially a little bit sooner than expected. Isn't that potentially a good thing in terms of the cycle remaining intact? Doesn't that mean that we can recover sooner? Doesn't that almost kind of alleviate the market's impatience that we've been feeling recently?
Yeah, I think it's a very reasonable point. And I think that very well could be the case. My concern, though, is that, of course, economic growth slowing, inflation still modest. Timing isn't really on our side here in terms of everything working out really neatly and nicely for the economic cycle. And I just acknowledge that may feel painful for certain sectors of the economy or for those who may lose their jobs or whatever the case may be. And so I think if even from an intellectual sense, you know, a year's time from now, this may end up being a very constructive outcome, it might not feel good throughout that process. But I'll acknowledge that it sounds like you've thought through this. And so I'm curious your interpretation of how this might pan out.
We know two things right now. We know that regional banks might be under some additional stress, real and or market created. And number two, we know that the big banks are healthy. We actually just got pretty much all of their first quarter earnings reports in the past few weeks. So we know that the big banks are healthy. And as long as that's the case, I really don't see this becoming truly systemic in the way that we would think about a systemic bank failure in the likes of the global financial crisis. What this implies here, though, is that, you know, if we admit that some regional banks are under some pressure, the big banks might not be, the regional bank issues can very well result in your vision of the credit crunch and that drop in employment conditions on that more local basis. So I think that these can actually kind of both be right. Since small businesses are actually the biggest employers in the country, it's also really important to consider that point that you said about how this is going to feel. And it's not going to feel good, especially because that strong jobs market up until this point has been enabling families to cope with the very difficult inflation situation. There is a very sort of bearish scenario that can be considered where if the labor market backstop gets removed, how quickly a lot of consumers might be feeling that inflation crunch even more than they are today.
To be honest, Julia, what you're describing might be an even more bumpy and uneven type of ride down for the economy than even what I was describing.
Yeah. And, you know, Lauren, you said that you had been arguing kind of the more bear case. What would it take for you to really truly believe in this bear case position and start arguing with me about it on a weekly basis?
I'm glad you asked that because while I think it's important to consider the risk of these bank failures and the way that it could evolve, it may not. I think in order to see the bear case for the economy really pan out, you would need to see more bank failures, which would require regulators not to have stepped in, not to have provided more support or assurance or confidence to the market. And those, there are steps that can keep those bank failures from happening even from here. Another thing that we'd be looking at to see if this downside scenario is materializing would be a reversal of what you were describing earlier. You know, if we see upticks of flows into the money market, suggesting that there's a slow bank run happening from checking accounts and into the money market, then that type of dynamic would be an indicator that perhaps the situation is not under control. I think it's important to mention, though, that in this phase of the cycle, the late stage of the economic cycle, what's happening in the economy and the risks that we see there aren't the same thing as market risks. Mm-hmm. That brings us to our portfolio pause, a segment of the program where we share an investment idea. And we've discussed a range of investment approaches relating to bank stress, cash, money market volatility in the past few weeks. But given that we're seeing a form of economic and market stress coming back into investors' highlights after we thought it was behind us, we understand that many investors are feeling concerned and skittish about the markets right now. Our colleague Macro Mike reminded us recently that stocks take the stairs up, but the elevator down, while volatility takes the elevator up and the stairs down. So volatility is likely to continue ahead from our perspective, but a focus on quality and a long-term time horizon, focusing on your goals and how you're going to meet them, that can help mitigate the impact of what we're seeing around us.
We're also having a lot of conversations recently about pairing needs through what are often called barbell strategies, but we can expand this type of thinking across asset classes. So investors seeking more shelter now might want to be allocating to the money market, but then pairing this with a higher yielding strategy in municipal or high yield bonds could help an investor adjust to their risk tolerance. Similar with equities, while a larger allocation to value equities right now can help investors focus on quality, as you mentioned, Lauren, pairing that with an allocation to profitable tech, to infrastructure, even international, can help calibrate one's exposure based on your time horizon.
Well, Julia, there is a lot changing out there. I really appreciate you jumping on and sharing some of your insights about the unfolding environment.
Always happy to do it.
Coming up next, April inflation figures come out this week. Will they signal relief or another reason to tighten policy? That's it for today. We'll be back next week for more Market Matters. In the meantime, please remember to give us a like, follow, or review wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you have a question or topic of interest, reach out to us on LinkedIn. You can also follow our views at newyorklifeinvestments.com by clicking the Insights tab. Until then, I'm Lauren Goodwin. See you next time. Our podcast is produced by Milo Benamox, and our music was composed by the fabulous Zach Young. I will now read our disclosures from compliance. Past performance is no guarantee of future results, which may vary. All investments are subject to market risk and will fluctuate in value. This material represents an assessment of the market environment at a specific date, is subject to change, and is not intended to be a forecast of future events or a guarantee of future results. This information should not be relied upon by the reader as research or investment advice regarding the funds or any issuer or security in particular. The strategies discussed are strictly for illustrative and educational purposes and are not a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any securities or adopt any investment strategy. There's no guarantee that any strategies discussed will be effective. This material contains general information only and does not take into account an individual's financial circumstances. This information should not be relied upon as a primary basis for an investment decision. Rather, an assessment should be made as to whether the information is appropriate in individual circumstances, and consideration should be given to talking to a financial advisor before making an investment decision. New York Life Investments is both a service mark and the common trade name of certain investment advisors affiliated with New York Life Insurance Company. Securities are distributed by NyLife Distributors, LLC, 30 Hudson Street, Jersey City, New Jersey, 07302, a wholly owned subsidiary of New York Life Insurance Company. NyLife Distributors, LLC is a member of FINRA SIPC.